Yes, open lines, and they continue in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Open Lines, and let's go right to the phones. First-time caller line, where are you calling from?
Are you talking to me?
I think if you are who you are, then it is you.
Okay, I'm a truck driver. I blow the horn, but my better half is asleep.
Let him sleep. Let him sleep.
Okay. I was taking a Sunday drive with a friend of mine. I was 17 years old. I was in high school, and we'd gone out in the country, and I forgot to check the gas tank before we took off. And this is over in Central Oregon, over around Prineville. We're out in the middle of nowhere. And I look down at the gas gauge and decide, uh-oh, we are in trouble. So in order to save gas, every time I get to the top of the hill, I'd shut the car off, throw it out of neutral, and let it coast down the hill. Of course, now, this has been years and years ago, but it was a standard shift car, so I could do that and get by with it. And we're out in the middle of nowhere. And finally, one time I think, well, this is getting me nowhere real quick, and I've got to get enough gas or save enough gas to get home. So one time I got the brilliant idea, okay, I'm going to push the car. I'm going to keep it going, and I'm going to push the car. And I got down to about 5 miles an hour. I look out, and I got the door open. I go, yeah, I can do this. And so I jump out and end up flat on my knees. Busted up my knees pretty bad.
Yeah.
I'm the driver of the car. My friend with me did not have a license, did not know how to drive a stick shift. I was the one that had to try and crawl to the car, busted up knees, skin up, bloody, just blood everywhere.
Oh.
And drove back to town, got in the car, drove back to town, and took myself to the hospital.
Oh, my God. And you had enough gasoline to get back to town then?
Yes, we did. I could have done that and not busted up my knees.
Not at all.
I've done some pretty moronic things. That has to be the topper.
Well, you know, we've all done things where we just don't think it through. We just do it, and that's why we end up in these moronic states. Let's go to the moron line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hi, I'm Phil. I'm calling from Austin.
Hey, Phil.
I'm 50 years old. When I was 19 years old, I was living in the north suburbs of Chicago, a real, real fancy place, and a guy that I barely knew invited me to a New Year's Eve party to tag along with him. I didn't know anybody there. It was in a town called Winnetka at a real, real fancy house. So I was driving, and on the way over there, he says, hey, you want to pop one of these sleeping pills? And I said, sure. And so he threw me, I think it was a Nebutol. And so I took it. And he said, hey, you want one of these red ones? And I said, sure. And so I took that. I think it was a Seconal. And so we get to the very, very fancy party. I'm drinking some champagne, and they had this buffet. It must have been catered because it was just so spectacular. It was all set up on this deck outside where they had all this heat, these heaters and everything to keep it warm. And all of a sudden, I just realized I'm about ready to throw up. I made it 2 feet and then just puked all over the ground, right next to the fancy buffet, all over by the salmon, the smoked salmon. And then I hear some gal say, you know, the least he could have done was made it to the bushes. So I walked outside. I walked back inside. I walked out to my car. I got in my car. I drove off, and I never saw any of those people again.
It's got to be one of the most embarrassing moments when you do that, isn't it?
It was pretty good. Now, I got one other one about a judge, if you want to hear it.
About a judge?
About a judge.
All right.
I was getting ripped off real bad by some lawyers in a divorce. This was about 15 years ago. And so I decided to get even with the lawyers that were ripping me off and a judge that was their buddies that was seeing to it that I got ripped off, that I'd picket in front of the courthouse here in Austin. So I got some picket signs.
And these were the lawyers, I assume, for your wife at the time.
No, they were my lawyers. They stole my money.
Your own lawyers were ripping you off?
One after another. So, you know, I fired one after another. They kept saying, you know, we'll do this. We'll get everything done for $5,000, and you'll be finished. And so then spend my $5,000 in a day and say, give me another 10. I'd fire them. And so anyway, so I finally got sick of it, and I was marching up and down in front of the courthouse, got on the radio 5 times on the local station here that I'm on here, actually, KLBJ.
Oh, yeah. That's our giant station down there.
Yep. And as a matter of fact, the news guy said, you know, what you're saying is so articulate and so important that, you know, normally we wouldn't interview people like you because mostly people at Pickett are nuts. And, but he put me on the air 5 times. And then, I thought I'd never get to the divorce because it was just going on and on and on.
Yeah.
And so, 5 months later, I found myself in the courthouse, in the courtroom with the judge who I'd been picketing against and 2 of the lawyers sitting in the courtroom. And I mean, the judge did not think it was funny.
No.
He did not. For some other reason, he figured out some other reason. He couldn't throw me in jail for picketing, but he figured out some other reason to charge me with contempt of court. I wound up in jail for 3 days.
Oh, he got you.
Yep.
Justice is blind, is it not? Man.
Justice is non-existent.
What did the picket sign say?
Let me see if I can remember right. One of them said the dishonorable and then the judge's name.
Okay.
And I actually had 3 picket signs. The other 2 had the names, they had on both sides names of lawyers that had ripped me off. And such and such is a crook, such and such is a scammer, such and such stole my money. I was just raving. I was holding the signs up and just poking it. Basically, I was getting 3 reactions from people. One was from lawyers walking by, and they didn't like it. And then there were some crazy people, and they were just trying to strike up conversations with me. And then there were a large group of people that were saying things like, "Hey, buddy, what are you trying to tell us that you don't think we already know?"
Would local TV come out too?
Just the radios.
Just radio did. Station. And how much did you end up spending, do you think, for this divorce because of all this?
Oh, probably somewhere around $65,000.
Unbelievable.
Well, you know, it could have been worse.
Does that include whatever you had to pay your ex?
No, that was just the lawyers.
$65,000 for lawyer fees in a divorce?
Oh, yeah, that's nothing. I know people that paid way more than that. That's really just a drop.
It might have been cheaper just to work out some deal with her, huh?
Well, you know, the next time I think about getting married, I think what I'll do is instead I'll just find some woman I don't like and I'll buy her a house.
Prenup. Man. All right, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Let's go to West of the Rockies. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi there.
Hello, my name's Chris. I'm calling from Herlong, California. I just want to get some advice on the hag syndrome.
Yeah.
I've never actually seen her, but it's like there's every now and then I wake up in the middle of the night. I'll go to bed, and I'll go to sleep, but it's like I'm awake, almost like not in reality, but I'm awake, and I'm like real frozen, and I can't move. I can't speak. Can't even blink my eyes like I'm frozen. And I got these really cold chills.
It could be sleep paralysis.
That's what I was wondering.
Sounds like it.
And stuff, but
I'm not Dr. George, but I think it sounds like sleep paralysis there, which is a pretty common syndrome, pretty common. But, you know, I've always told people, I'm not a doctor. If you need to go get checked out, get yourself a physical every once in a while. You never know. Let's go to our East of the Rockies line. You're on Coast to Coast. Hi.
Good evening, George.
Hi, welcome to the program.
It's a pleasure to speak with you, sir.
Thank you.
I was calling about a story about a friend of mine that happened a few years back. I was listening to, back when Art was on, talking about the Greys and the Saurians and describing the different races and so forth. And John was running across the alien highway in a tractor trailer, and he pulled over to answer Mother Nature's call, and he's about half asleep. He gets out of the truck and climbs back up in, and he's sitting there listening. And they're describing, you know, large triangular-shaped gray heads, large black eyes, and he catches a flicker of movement to his right. And as he looks, there's this big gray head with black eyes looking in the window of the truck.
Oh.
Well, John carried a little .38 revolver in the truck with him, and he immediately snatches a pistol as he's falling out of the cab of the truck. He's firing rounds at the window, shot the window out of the truck. He goes running around the truck with his gun, bigger than he has just bagged the gray.
Yeah.
He got there in time to see long legs and black and white tail feathers, beaten feet. It was next to an ostrich farm.
Oh, no.
So it wasn't a gray, but time. He did succeed in scaring the living daylights out of an ostrich.
And he didn't hit it, did he?
No, but he had to explain to the terminal manager when he got back how he'd shot the window out of his truck shooting at an alien.
Yeah, exactly. How do you explain that one? Thanks for the call. Wildcard line, your turn. You're on Coast to Coast with us. Hi there.
Hello?
Yes, sir. Welcome to the show.
Hello?
Yeah, go ahead.
Me?
Yep.
Oh, well, that's perfect because what the last caller was basically proving a point that I was going to make, which is believing is seeing. And I was listening to your program about the chupacabra yesterday.
Uh-huh.
And the woman in Texas was describing the one that she had in her freezer.
The rancher, yeah.
Yeah, the rancher. Anyways, when she was describing it, she said it was hairless, it had blue-black skin, and had maybe a little hair between its ears.
Mm-hmm.
It had, you know, just its fangs and no other teeth. I realized immediately what it was.
Is that one of those Peruvian dogs?
Well, that's what I was talking about. I raised Chinese crested hairless, and but there's the Peruvian Inca orca, the
yeah.
Chinese crested. There's also the Mexican hairless, which is the Xolo eats quintly. And these dogs, it's a very strange breed because the hairlessness is it's a semi-dominant. So if you breed a hairless Mexican hairless to any other dog, including a coyote, you're going to end up with some hairless half-breed dogs or half-breed coyotes.
And they'll look unbelievably bizarre.
They'll look unbelievably bizarre. And when I checked out your site where it showed the ones that had been hit by cars or shot or something, that's exactly what they are. And I'm surprised the mammalogist didn't recognize. You know.
Yeah, they're gonna do the old DNA test on it, but I would guess it is a.
It's a hybrid.
Cross. Yeah.
And I don't know how close she was to the Mexican border, where there would be probably more Mexican hairless running around.
As a matter of fact, we've got some pretty graphic pictures that she just sent us tonight.
Mm-hmm.
They're up there at the coasttocoastam.com website. I mean, it's kind of gruesome.
Yeah.
So if you open up the page, you will see that. So I want to warn everybody, but the. It's right up there above the Mueller flying saucer.
Yeah, but if you Google, like, you know, Mexican hairless or...
They look just like them.
Yeah, and even, you know, the world's ugliest dog, Sam, you'll get an idea of the teeth, you know, and everything else about what the thing is. And the thing is about the blood sucking or the draining, you know, obviously, unless it has hypodermic needle teeth, it's not going to be sucking blood out, but if... that chicken had its throat ripped in the jugular vein, it's going to drain all the blood out of the animal.
And these animals are starving. They're out in the wild, so they're going to tear into anything they can find.
Exactly. So, I mean, so my take on it is that this actually is probably a hybrid between a Mexican hairless and a coyote. And it would show the hairlessness, the weak dentition, and just the tuft of hair maybe between the ears. And I've seen hybrids between the Mexican hairless and a Cocker Spaniel, and it's very strange looking to see a dog with Cocker Spaniel ears but looking like a pig.
And that should be pretty easy to discover once they do their DNA testing or whatever. They might even do it just when they look at it.
Yeah, I'm sure they'll be able to. So, I mean, unfortunately, this one is not, you know, the mythical chupacabra. I think it's basically a hybrid between a hairless dog and a coyote.
You know, it's incredible, though, how these bizarre animals through hybrids just seem to pop up all over the place.
Yeah. I mean, there's more of that around than you
realize. Yeah, and they're out there in the wild. Hey, thanks. Appreciate your call. Let's go to our first-time caller line. Welcome to the program, whoever you are.
Hi, George.
Yes.
Tom from Palm Springs.
Tom, what's going on there?
Well, I'm a lawyer here, so your caller a little bit ago would enjoy this moronic story. Of what I did a few years ago.
By the way, is that a fair price for a divorce, $65,000?
I've seen it go a lot less and a lot more.
Gosh, so he's right. Okay.
Yeah, he is right. Here's my story. About 3 years ago, I own a camper van, and I was camping with my friend's ex-girlfriend. That's another story.
Oh, it sure is. That sounds like the story we might want to hear. But
maybe. And there's a place outside of Palm Springs called Idlewild. It's a nice place in the mountains. And we had gotten up there around just before dusk, and within about 10 minutes, we had already drank up most of the beer we had. So I went to the local store and picked up another six-pack of beer and came back to the campsite, and our little spot happened to be on a hill pointed downward. And I was so excited about having the beer that I parked the car and I jumped out of the van without putting the brake on, leaving the keys in.
Mm-hmm.
And so the van starts rolling downhill, headed straight for all of the campers down below us.
Oh.
And my van is about 6,000 pounds, I imagine. So I tried to stop it by grabbing the door, which, of course, I couldn't stop it because it's very heavy.
Yeah.
And in grabbing the door, I slipped, and my foot went underneath the tire.
Oh.
Tires going forward, so it wasn't really underneath it. However, there was a berm right in front of the van. It hit the berm, whirled up a little bit, and rolled right back onto my foot.
Ouch!
And so I am sitting there with one foot under the van, all 6,000 pounds of the van on my foot.
Has it stopped at this point?
It has stopped right on my foot.
On you. You've stopped the van from
rolling. Yeah, the berm stopped the van, and then it rolled back right on top of my foot.
Oh, my God.
So I'm screaming and yelling, and the girl is trying to help, and as best I could, I'm trying to get her to start the car so she can roll it up on the berm again so I can get my foot out. And my car, you need to sort of jiggle the key a special way for it to start. So she was having trouble. But luckily, we had some neighbors that we had befriended at the campsite, and they heard me screaming and yelling.
I mean, are you in excruciating pain at that point?
Yes. Okay. I'm sure that that's the end of my foot. There's no doubt in my mind that
they're going to cut it off or it's gone. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just sure of that. But I just, whatever it is, I'm just trying to get some help. And a fella next to us comes in. And gets in the van. Of course, when he sits down, another 200 pounds. So I'm screaming even more, but he managed to get the van just up on the berm high enough so I could pull my foot out.
How did he know whether to go forward or backwards?
Because I'm telling him in my screaming voice to please go forward.
Okay.
And at least he knew what I was talking about and did it perfectly and pulled my foot out, and I look at it, and it's a little teeny trickle of blood. And other than that, as it turned out, there wasn't a single thing wrong, no broken bones.
You've got to be kidding me.
No, I think the reason I lucked out is it was a kind of a sandy little area where we were parked.
Ah, your foot went down into the sand.
Yeah, I think it cushioned everything.
Yeah, had that been concrete or something, you would have been crushed. Your foot would have been crushed. So were you able to walk on it right away?
I got a lot of good sympathy and some more beers and put a little ice on it. And believe it or not, the next day we went for a 3-mile hike and it was just fine.
No limp.
No limp, no nothing.
Man,
it was like a miracle.
You're lucky. You're all lucky. You're lucky that the van didn't go smashing into all the other campers.
That was my real fear.
Yeah. That would have been, plus you could have killed somebody.
Yeah, I was panicked at that point.
Unbelievable.
Had a happy ending.
Yep, sure does. I wouldn't call you a moron. I would say you had a strange accident.
Thank you. That's very kind.
Okay. Take care. Take care indeed. Hey, we're going to continue. We've got another hour and a half to go. Email me, george@coasttocoastam.com. Some of you who are still emailing me wanting to know the results of the Stanton Friedman, Michael Shermer Skeptics Cage debate. Stanton Friedman won that by fast blast vote, 80% to 20%. That was a legitimate fast blasting poll. Michael Shermer, in a humorous way, said it was rigged. It was not rigged. Everybody was tallied, and it came up 80%, 20%. That's Stanton Friedman, the victor. That's his second victory, by the way. He's 2-for-2, having beaten SETI's Seth Shostak as well. I'll be back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM. Well, it's time to say hi to all of you who keep Coast to Coast the number one rated late night program in the world. Hello to you listening on your favorite radio stations, wherever you may be across North America. And then the StreamLink members, thank you so much for all that you do. Working on some more features for you, by the way, as we promised. They're toiling away for us. And then, of course, XM Satellite, hi to all of you as well. And then the various chat rooms, many of whom you've heard us talk about before, the NighthawkZone.com folks, celebrating their second anniversary. They've been doing that all week. They're in a very festive state right about now. And then the Imaginative World folks, hello to you. Fantastic Forum, the Into Infinity, Frog Forum, Sorcery IRC, MySpace, the various chat rooms across Dallas and Wichita and some other areas where groups get together, National Radio Club. Boy, if I've missed any, just keep sending Lex a list and he'll send them on to me. Don't forget Ian Punnett with Coast to Coast on Saturday, beginning at 10 p.m. Pacific time. And then I'll be doing the program for you this Sunday. I do the first Sunday now of every month. And then we'll have our guest hosts coming in thereafter for you. Let's go to the phones. First time caller line. Hello there. Where are you calling from?
I'm calling from Fort Worth.
Well, welcome to the show, Miss Texas. What's going on?
Well, I have a short little moron story, and then if I could, I'd like to tell you about an experience I had in a car. My moron story is this. I have an Anatolian Shepherd, 130-pound Anatolian Shepherd dog, and I get his medication and my medication at the same time. He takes thyroid medicine. And I had the pills in one hand and the glass of orange juice in the other, preparing to take my medicine. And then I took the medicine, but I realized I took the dog's medicine instead of mine.
Oh, no. And down the hatch it went.
Oh, yes. And I called poison control. I was very frantic. And they actually told me that it's very common for people to take the wrong medication.
Now, dude, what happened? Any after effects?
Well, actually, yeah, I was. They said I would have some insomnia for a little while, and I did for a couple of nights. I had some insomnia and some nervousness, but it went away.
Did you bark?
No.
I would have been freaking if I you know, the medication, is the medication for an animal the same as a human, just different dosage? It must be.
I think it is a lot of times, and I think the pharmaceutical companies tend to market things for an animal as being, you know, different, and so we end up paying more, when in fact we could buy the same thing for a human a lot cheaper.
Would you like me to send you a bag of Purina One? In case you get hungry?
No.
All right. Okay, so now, and then you're going to tell me what you did in your car? You really don't have to tell us that if you don't
want
to.
This is a little bit different. We were traveling in a car on Cockrell Hill in Dallas, and at this time it had no guardrails, this particular road. And we were driving along, and there was a semi in front of us, a semi behind us, and two big vans on either side. And it just started to rain, and there was, you know how when you rain, kind of like you skid sometimes in the oil.
That first-time rain that kicks up the oil. In Los Angeles, it's like an ice rink when that happens.
And so we were driving along, and we started to skid, and the friend I was with said, "Oh, my God, I'm going to hit somebody." And the car started to spin, and I kid you not, we spun for over a mile, didn't hit a thing, and when we stopped spinning, we were about 6 inches from the drop-off, and the road was completely cleared.
You spun for a mile?
Yes, sir.
You probably thought it was history time on that one.
Well, I did, and actually, it was weird because it felt like, to me, and I don't know if I just imagined this to explain what happened or what, but it felt like somebody picked the car up and set it back down again.
Jeez. A few years ago in St. Louis, I was on the freeway going up a hill and did not know there was a patch of ice below, and as I came down the hill, I noticed there must have been 5 to 7 cars all scattered all over the place. Not moving. I mean, one's pointed at me, one's pointed toward the guardrail. They're all over the place. You know, some may have even hit each other. And I look at this and I go, oh, my God, because the whole thing apparently was just a slab of ice. And I put my foot on the brakes, and that's, of course, the worst thing to do. You're supposed to just pump. And, you know, so I pulled them off right away and started pumping. And as I'm sliding and spinning, I am just doing whatever I can, and I'm spinning around each one of those cars. I went through it and never touched one of them. And then
amazing.
Ended up pointing the right way, as I got onto the non-ice portion of the freeway, and then just pulled over and made sure everybody was okay, and off I went. But it was unbelievable how that happened.
Wow.
Strange. And I've even gotten reports, and thanks for your call, where people have had cars go right through them dimensionally. I mean, they just go, they should have been hit, and it never happened. Then they see the car behind them going the other way. And in some cases, the person in that car shook his head, too, the same way. That's strange. Richard C. Hoagland checks in with us and tells us that the liquid oxygen fuel is being readied and put in the rocket of the Phoenix that is going to go to Mars with launch time in less than T-minus 75 minutes. It will go up, hopefully, some 26 minutes after we are off the air with the live portion of the show. Some stations flip and also play the first part of the show on tape. We're on the air, for example, for 7 hours in Los Angeles. But Richard C. will continue to monitor this situation throughout the night. But so far, so good. There's a window that they've got to take tonight. And then they only have a few more days left of a window. So let's hope we get this up there. It's a 9-month mission. And it'd be nice to see if they can finally find life there definitively, huh? Let's go back to the phones. Let us go to our wild card line. You are on Coast to Coast. It is your turn. Hi there.
Hey, how you doing, George?
I'm doing great. Where are you calling from?
I am calling from the Thumb area in Michigan.
Yeah.
Pretty cool up here. But, hey, I have a story for you. I'd like to get your take on it.
All right, go for it.
My brother was 8. I was 10. It was about school time, you know, during the year, September, October-ish. In New York, it gets real dark, you know, by 9 o'clock.
Oh, yeah.
Not like here in Michigan. And my father, who is just, the demon's cousin there, sent me and my brother to a store that was a block and a half away at the end of the next block. So we leave the house and we walk to the end of our block. We cross the street, and as we're crossing the street, from the right-hand side of us where there were hedges, comes something, I don't believe it was a person. It like had a cape on, but not like a Superman cape that kind of ends at the waist, you know. This kind of ended sort of at the knees, kind of raggedy, and just chased us all the way to the store. We run into the store, and we're frantic. Oh, my God. Something's chasing us.
Help,
please
help.
Absolutely. Two little kids, you know. And, you know, we lived in a small city in New York, and they kind of looked at us like we're crazy. And we call home, and we're like, we're just terrified to come home. And my father was just a mean person, and it didn't matter. We had to achieve our goal and come back to the house real quick and in a hurry. And I truly do not remember the travel home.
But you know you made it, and you probably ran like crazy.
Absolutely. But the odd thing was, I used to listen to you in Virginia. I found out about your program in Virginia. I was thrilled as a security guard to have something interesting to listen to. And moved to Michigan, couldn't find you, and now I finally found you, and a couple things fit into that puzzle. Earlier that year, maybe 6 weeks before this had happened, my father became his cruelest, and we had gone to a Sunday school, which was one of our first church experience for the first time in our life. It only lasted 2 days, but it was, as my memory recalls, just such a thrilling time, those 2 days, to have that peace away from him.
Was he abusive?
Extremely. Oh. Extremely abusive. And the state even found it out, but he moved us out of state, moved us back in state within 3 months, and they never came after him. So we were just kind of left in that household, you know?
Yeah.
But about 6 to 8 weeks after this incident happened, which the other night you guys brought this to my attention, we had a natural disaster in our town.
What happened?
And the river flooded to the point where, you know, FEMA and all that had come in.
Oh, yeah.
And when you guys were talking about the Mothman prophecy, I'm like a newbie when it comes to supernatural.
Well, you'll get your refresher course if you keep listening.
Right, right. So the other night when you were talking about the Mothman prophecies, all these things just kind of fit into the all happen within a 4-month period.
Well, let me tell you something. A lot of towns have been getting flooded over the last few months. It's been a rough season, you know, that wise. Mm-hmm. Everything is strange. Just keep listening to the program, because you will hear some things that will make your hair stand up. You'll hear things that will make you laugh, cry. We've got it all here on Coast to Coast. Let's go west of the Rockies. Good morning. You're up. Hello.
Hello, George.
Yes, sir. Hi.
Okay, yeah, I got a story for you. It's quite the stupid maneuver.
All right, go ahead.
What happened was, it was wintertime, and we used to burn our garbage in a 50-gallon drum. And, well, the garbage was wet. It was wintertime, raining.
Was this like out at a farm or a ranch or something?
Yeah, we had a few acres, so yeah. We burned our garbage.
Okay.
Everybody else did up there around that part of the country, foothills, Central California. And so it was, the garbage was all wet. So I took some gas and I put it on there because I just couldn't get it going. Apparently, I put just quite a bit too much on there. And what I should have done was threw the match, but I just held the match to it, to a corner of it. And the next thing I know, I hear like this jet engine roar and I'm seeing red. And I put my hands over my face immediately. What had happened was I put way too much gas on there.
You almost built yourself a rocket engine.
Yeah, that's what I did. And when I put my hands over my face, I had jumped back, and I was peeking through to see if I could still have any vision left if it completely burned me real bad. But all I remember was seeing garbage just raining all around me, just milk cartons and everything falling down to the ground. And so I went in the house and looked in the mirror, and it had burnt all my eyebrows off.
Oh, my God.
And burnt my hair straight back. You know, like you see the cartoon characters where they shoot them in the head.
Yeah.
Their hair is just blown.
Oh, you must have been a child. You're lucky you didn't go blind.
Yeah, that's what had happened to my hair. It just blew it straight back. But I'll never forget that sound, though. It was like a jet engine. It was just a roar. So, yeah, that's...
We might have to award you the moronic story of the night.
that was a pretty stupid thing to do. I don't like burning garbage anymore. Every time I had to put any garbage in a can again, I didn't like to light it.
I don't blame you. Let's go to the moron hotline. You're on Coast to Coast. Hello there. Hello. Yeah. Hi, go ahead, sir.
Yeah, in the early 70s, I had a job at the student radio station. Actually, it was KUSC here in Los Angeles.
Uh-huh.
And they had, you know, hour and a half classical music cut. So we used to have great conversations while the music was playing. Well, I didn't pot down the mics, and my friend and I were discussing the merits and our criticisms of the profs. Now, unfortunately, this is a 50,000-watt radio station that's also piped into the faculty lounge. And, of course, we were naming these profs by name and so forth. And we were broadcasting our criticism of them and, of course, you know, not sparing any language and so forth. And, well, the next day, of course, we had to stand in line and register for the classes and so forth. But despite that, I did graduate and so forth, but we had the reputation on campus for an hour and a half dissertation on the idiocy of certain profs.
Broadcasting 101, you always think the mic is on, no matter what.
Well, yeah, we'd had our radio telephone licenses for probably 90 days at that point and didn't pot it down, and you know, it's kind of like sending a bad email to the wrong person.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, thanks for that. You know, when I'm in St. Louis broadcasting out of the cave, I'm in there with my microphone, and, you know, I don't know if I'm on the air or not. Everything goes to Los Angeles, and my board op and my engineer, I mean, he controls the buttons. And so if he hasn't shut the button, I'm on the air. And I don't know that. So I have my own personal rule, and they know, they work with me on this. I don't say anything when I'm in St. Louis until they tell me you're on or you're off. And sometimes a new guy will fill in once in a while, and he'll try to talk to me through my headsets in St. Louis, and I won't answer him because he hasn't told me I'm off yet. And that's just a rule you learned a long time ago, and you always have to assume that the microphone is on, and that's how so many broadcasters have either screwed up or sometimes lost their careers by saying things, and they just didn't know the microphone was on. So you just got to be careful. Let's go to the phones. You are on Coast to Coast. Hi there. Hello. Gotta go. By the way, we are on a delay. So if you are not listening on your phone, just your radio, when I go to you on the phone, you're not going to know you're on. So if you're calling in to be on the program, this is another rule for all of you. Be on the phone, turn off or down your radio. Because if I don't hear you go after a few seconds, I'm off to my next call. You're on the air with us. Hi there.
Hey, George.
There you go. You did that perfectly.
Hey, I've just been sitting there listening to you on the radio. I listened to you quite a bit, and I caught you on the Larry King.
Yeah, there I was.
It was awesome. I have a little story for you.
Okay.
It started in 1968. I was just a child. We were sitting getting our back scratched with my grandfather. And the front picture window is right in front of where the television set is. My sister looked up, seen this image, seen this figure standing there. She started screaming. My uncle was home from being in the FBI, okay? He was an FBI agent for a little over 3 years. He looked up, he saw it, he grabbed a baseball bat. He went out the front door where the figure was at. We started screaming. We were scared. Now, my grandmother saw it. She said it was the devil.
Oh.
And she said it was the most hideous thing she had ever saw. Well, my grandfather went out the back door, and when they got a hold of this, when my uncle, we seen this in the back bedroom window. We watched my uncle grab a hold of this man, this figure. It looked like an alien to us after we sat down with my grandfather later on in years. He started talking about this after this occurred. He started talking about George Bush and how this man was going to cover up all of the UFO stuff and not mention it again and divert this planet that we live on and divert it into another belief, okay?
Huh.
And he said, now, here's what he told him.
Poor George gets blamed for everything.
Okay, but this is where it comes out to Roswell. He started talking about not just Area 51 and the Roswell, but he started talking about Wright-Patterson Air Force Base.
Now, how does he know about that?
Okay, this is where it gets really hairy. They said that he was a World War I veteran and a World War II veteran. And that's what they wrote him down in history as serving in the country. He said, you'll know 5 years after I'm dead and gone. He died in 1981. 5 years to that date, my grandmother got a letter in the mail stating that they could not give us any more information of what he did for our country.
What, do you have any idea?
He told me, and as we were kids, we had Men in Black come to our house and ask us kids.
I tell you what, he knew something. He knew something. Stay on the line. We'll finish up with you when we come back.